Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Bhakti Vedanta ki jai, Granth Rai Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Giridhar Maharaj ki jai, Jai Nitai Go Premanande. Okay. So tonight we'll continue with chapter 4, verses 10 to 23. Of Canto 11. Chapter 4. Canto 11. Verses 10 to 23. So we'll finish the chapter tonight. The demigods place many obstacles on the path of those who worship you to transcend the temporary abodes of the demigods and reach your supreme abode. Those who offer the demigods their assigned shares in sacrificial performances encounter no such obstacles. But because you are the direct protector of your devotee, he is able to step over the head of whatever obstacle the demigods place before him. Uttama Bhakti, you want to?
Demigods surrounded by Kamadeva.
Or Uddhava Bandhu. I said Uttama Bhakti.
Uttama Bhakti.
But now I want Uddhava Bandhu.
Okay.
You guys work it out. Someone read.
Demigods surrounded by Kamadeva or Cupid, recognizing their offense at the lotus feet of the personal Lord, Nara Narayana Krishi. He points out the insignificant position of the demigods in relation to the Supreme Lord. Just as a farmer must pay a specific percentage of his profit to the king or particular head as tax money, all the human beings must offer a percentage of their material wealth to the demigods in sacrifice. In Bhagavad Gita, however, the Lord explains that the demigods are also his servants, and it is he himself who awards all the benedictions through the agency of the demigods. Maya Iva, Bhita and Hita. Although a Vaishnava or devotee of the Lord has no need to worship the demigods being proud of their exalted material position, sometimes present the exclusive devotion of the Vaishnava to the Lord and thus try to cause the devotee to fall down. As described in this verse, Sura Krita Bhavavo Nattahya. But the demigods here point out that Krishna is directly the protector of the devotees. Therefore, so-called impediments become stimuli for further spiritual advancement for a sincere devotee.
Okay, that's good. What are the points there? There's noise coming out of this phone. Whose phone is this? Yours, yeah. I don't think it's turned off at the other end. I can hear right in the front. Okay, what are the points?
I think it said that if you worship Lord directly, I mean, not through the demigods, it's still, even if the demigods are hungry, he's always protected.
Yeah.
So no harm can be done.
Anything else?
A real devotee sees good and bad as opportunities to get closer to the Lord.
Yeah. Good. Anything else?
Only those people who want to enjoy sense gratification need to worry about the demigods. Devotees respect the demigods, but they don't have to pander to the demigods. So sometimes the demigods are, they mentioned, Lord Indra, for example, we have cases, Maharaj, in the Lord Indra, for example, he tried to bring so many impediments to Maharaj Prithu's pious sacrifice, but after 99, when the Lord personally came and told Prithu, Maharaj, you don't have to do the 100th one, and Prithu Maharaj did not do it, because what he wanted was the satisfaction of Maharaj.
Mm.
We also see Govardhan Pasma, where devotees
on Krishna's instruction, they stopped the worship of Indra and then worship Govardhan. But Indra responded by sending someone to them. So devotees who are in the shelter of Krishna will always go by what pleases Krishna. Regardless of if they may have to suffer something at the hands of the some reprisal. So they don't care.
Good. Any other point?
Worship of the Lord directly is always better.
Yeah.
It suggests that pride is equal to envy of the Lord.
Mm. Yeah, it's a good one. Very good. Yeah, so we're seeing here the Bhagavatam's thesis or understanding is that we have to worship Krishna directly. We don't need to worship some other living entity. The Bhagavatam has stated on many occasions that just by worshipping Krishna, all others will be satisfied. This is called Shraddha. Prabhupada quotes this verse from Chaitanya Charitamrita in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Shraddha shabde vishwasa kahe sudrida nishchaya. Krishna bhakti hoile savakama kritohaya. Yeah? So the meaning is, if you worship Krishna, then savakama kritohaya means all other
desires
and it means all other functions will be served. That is faith. That is the definition of faith. So Krishna will test all of us. How much faith do you have? Your faith will be tested. How much do you stay fixed on Krishna? Do you try to get fulfillment of your desires through other mediums besides Krishna? Just like these days, people go to so many other places. They try so many other things to become satisfied. But everything is fallible. The whole world's fallible. You just see it now. Just look at the headlines. Everything is falling apart before our eyes. You can't even go to China now. Devotees flying to India have to cancel their flights because they're going through China. So many difficulties are coming. Australia is on fire. China has a disease which will kill half the planet. All of these discrepancies are there. So then the test is, where do we put our faith? Do we put our faith in Krishna, or do we try to rely on other things, material things? So previously, in the previous age, people would worship different demigods, and they think the demigods will protect them, but that's not the case. The Bhagavatam explicitly says, that's why the Bhagavatam is the final thesis or the final work of Srila Vyasadeva, who compiled all the Vedas. Right? Most of the Vedas deal with Karmakanda. Right? It says 96%, apparently, is dealing with worship of demigods. Right? But the Bhagavatam says, don't worship demigods. Focus on...
Sorry, what percentage?
96. I don't know, I've heard that, I don't know if it's accurate or not, but it says that most of the Vedas deal with demigod worship, but the Bhagavatam rejects all of that. That's why Krishna says at the end of the Gita, Sarvadhamam Parijaja, reject everything else, right? Just reject everything and just surrender to me. And then the Bhagavatam begins at the same place. Kaitabhadama, right, is rejected. Right, false teachings are rejected. Right, and now just focus on Krishna, worship Krishna. So this is the essence of the Bhagavatam, which is being spoken about. So, in the purport, it says impediments will become stimulus for surrender to Krishna and for advancement in Krishna consciousness. Right, we advance in Krishna consciousness when the impediments come. I read there was a quote, it was outside of our tradition, but it said something to the effect that every impediment which is sent to us is like a stepping stone on the path towards Krishna. So whenever an impediment or a difficulty comes in our life, that is an opportunity to go forward in our spiritual progress. That's what the impediments are for. They're directly being sent by Krishna. So the question is, why would Krishna give you so many impediments? Why would he give you so many challenges and difficulties?
To test us.
Yes,
detach.
Yeah, test our faith. Make us more. What's that? To become detached, yeah. To make us more surrendered unto Him. What sort of a person is this? Who put you through so many difficulties in your life. And the whole time he does it, he just smiles at you. What sort of a person would do this?
A merciful person.
That person who loves you the most.
Very good. Very good. The people who love you the most will tell you what you really need to hear. That's why we take guru, because the guru will tell you what you actually need to hear. He won't tell you what will flatter you or what you... Sometimes we think our friends are the people who tell us what we'd like to hear. Right? All the good things about ourselves. Your real friend is someone who will tell you what you need to hear. Right? The most confronting things about yourself. Right? So that's what Krishna is like. Krishna doesn't speak to us. He may speak to us through these representatives, the guru and the devotees. But he gives us circumstances all the time to make us surrender more to him. So that is the situation. Any points so far?
Tulsidasji, he paid obeisances to the person who was criticizing him, saying that, without criticism, he can't improve.
Who said that?
Tulsidasji, you know, when he read and wrote
the one who wrote Ramayana.
Ramcharitmanas.
Except we don't accept his version of the Ramayana.
Valmiki Ramayana film.
No. Prabhupada said we accept Valmiki's, but we don't accept Tulsidas's. Prabhupada said that.
But, you know,
Prabhupada said.
What's his name?
Tulsidas.
No,
Prabhupada.
The guru, the initiating guru, he lives in Vrindavan.
Radha Govind
Maharaj.
Who?
Radha Govind Maharaj.
Yeah.
He normally refers.
And
to
he always refers. To Tulsidas? Ramcharitmanas. Because
many,
he used
many
to.
In lecture, he mentioned Tulsidas' prayers
Yeah, yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, because Prabhupada said we don't accept that version because it's tinged with Mayavad philosophy. So we don't accept that version. So, I mean, Prabhupada was obviously warning us because we were immature. Maybe someone of Maharaja's level can extract the good part.
Because he used to be working in that company. And he is very... and actually, the Hanuman Prasad told him to go and take initiation from Srila Prabhupada.
Good. Any other points?
Sorry, Bhagavad Gita says men of small intelligence worship the demigods.
Yeah.
Krishna says it.
Yeah. Okay. So read the second paragraph.
Which verse did you say from Charitamrita?
Chaitanya Charitamrita. I don't know the reference. It's in the Prabhupada quotes in the second chapter of the Gita.
Oh, okay.
I don't know which part it's from. I think it's Madhya Leela, I think.
Okay.
But that's Uttama Bhakti. Unless Uttama Bhanda wants to read. Are you sure? Okay. Take his blessings before you read.
The demigods here said, "We thought, our dear Lord, that we could disturb your consciousness by our foolish tricks. But by your mercy, even your devotees pay little regard to us. So why should we take our foolish behavior seriously?" The word "yadi" here is used to indicate the certainty that Krishna is always the protector of his surrendered devotees. Although there may be many obstacles on the path of the sincere devotee who is preaching the glories of the Lord, such obstacles increase the determination of the devotee. Therefore, according to Srila Jiva Goswami, the continuous obstacles presented by the demigods form a kind of ladder or stairway upon which the devotee steadily progresses back to the kingdom of God. A similar verse appears in Srimad Bhagavatam, Tathānate Madhavar Tāvakaha Kavachit Bahrasyanti Marga Tvai Vadha Sokhidaha Tvaya Bhigupta Vicharanti Nirbhaya Vinaya Karikapa Murdasu Prabhu. O Madhava, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord of the Goddess of Fortune. If devotees completely in love with you sometimes fall from the path of devotion, they do not fall like non-devotees, for you still protect them. Thus they fearlessly traverse the ends of their opponents and continue to progress in devotional service.
Okay. Any points?
I remember Bhagdrava, when he was taken on the chariot from the spiritual world, he also put that personality, fear of
death, stood on his head. Yeah. Any other point?
Once you love the Lord with bhakti, he will never let you go. No matter what you do, he will always bring you back to him. Yeah. He'll never give up on you.
But he will slap you around the face.
Maybe. But he won't give up on you.
Yes, but he will slap you.
I know.
You can't do whatever you want. It doesn't work like that. Lord Balaram will sit on your chest and hit you in the face. And Subhadra will say, hit him again. So, any other points?
In India, they do a lot of demigod worship in India. Correct?
That's why I live in Australia.
Yeah. Devasatmaga Bhuti. Krishna says Devasatmaga Bhuti. 2.41 Bhagavad Gita.
India, there's too much demigod worship and too many weddings.
Right.
That's why I stay here. Otherwise. Any other points?
Well, Srila Prabhupada always used to say that you should respect all the demigods,
yeah,
but you should always worship Krishna.
Yeah. Yeah, Rupa Goswami says that's an item of bhakti, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, in nectar devotion. You can't neglect the demigods.
Yeah.
It's an aparad, actually, if you disrespect them.
Yeah.
Mahaprabhu said the same thing. Mahaprabhu. You must respect them.
You must respect, but you should worship Krishna.
That's good.
Actually, I tried to criticize a king in the... I used to feel bad because he used to be interfering. Then I realized, but he's just doing Leela, so why should I criticize him?
Don't criticize him.
Yeah. I did a mistake.
Even the demigods in this verse are glorifying the devotees of the Lord and glorifying the Lord as well.
Hmm.
So it's kind of nice that bhakti is so high that even the demigods are bewildered by it.
Hmm. Yeah, good. So, actually, this is where the point was. I thought it was outside of our tradition, but Jiva Goswami himself is saying it. That the continuous obstacles presented by the demigods form a kind of ladder or stairway upon which the devotee steadily progresses back to the kingdom of God. So it's actually the demigods themselves who are sometimes testing us on Krishna's behalf, to test us to see how sincere we are. And it becomes like a ladder, right? Each time we have an obstacle or a difficulty, then it's a stepping stone towards Krishna. If we pass the test. Sometimes we don't pass the test. Sometimes we go backwards. But if we go forwards, then we get closer to Krishna. So in this verse, in this purport, it's clearly explained that Krishna will always protect the devotees under all circumstances.
No matter what.
No matter what. Although Krishna says, I will protect your devotion, there is no guarantee he'll protect your material body. That's not what Krishna means. Don't think it means he will save you from death. Maybe he wants you to die. If he wants to save you, he will save you. If he wants to kill you, he will kill you. That's up to him. Yeah. It's up to him. So don't think the protection means just protecting your material body. Maybe the material body needs to be taken away. Maybe you need to be sick, right, in order to increase your bhakti or your devotion to Krishna. So don't think that protection means looking after the material body. It means looking after your bhakti or your devotion. That's what Krishna is specifically guaranteeing. So protection is there for all the devotees. But it's spiritual protection. It's not material protection. Any points?
So if we don't reach perfection somehow, then Lord will protect us on devotion, and He will, maybe next life He will...
You'll just start off where you left off, that's all. If you're 78% perfect, then you start off at 79% in the next life.
That's nice.
But Prabhupada once said, you only have to be 70% perfect.
But we don't know whether how much we are.
You better pray hard then. Pray to Krishna. Just, leave it up to Krishna to decide.
Yeah.
Up he to knows, him. Super soul.
Super soul knows everything. This is that.
It's not that demigods always give difficulties, sometimes they reward you as well.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes they can. They assist. Prabhupada says earlier in the Bhagavatam, they assist the devotees. The demigods make arrangements so that we can do our service.
Like Indra created Indra Prastha for Pandavas from Kanda Prastha.
Not Indra.
He showered the rains.
Yeah, in that respect. Vishwakarma built the actual place, but yeah, he showed the rooms. That's true.
That's why it was named after him in the Prastha.
Hmm. Yeah, so Prabhupada points that out. They will assist the devotees. They will make arrangements. Sometimes, like, your service, everything just goes like that. Everything just falls into place. That's the demigods, or Krishna, through the demigods, then he's making the arrangements. So everything will fall into place.
Like today, I managed to come 20 minutes early. Krishna managed to give me prasadam early, so I came here 20 minutes early.
if you come late, you can't blame Krishna. That's you. That's not Krishna.
No, I say, Lord, even demigods, they depend on the mercy of Krishna. Because Lord Ganesh, he receives all your status. But because he does it from the power of Lord Nasingari.
Yeah, yeah. They're Krishna's agents. They work. Yeah. Krishna works through the demigods.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
That's why we should respect that.
Yeah. Some men practice severe penances to cross beyond our influence, which is like an immeasurable ocean with endless waves of hunger, thirst, heat, cold, and other conditions brought about by the passing of time, such as the sensuous wind and the urges of the tongue and sex organs. Nevertheless, although crossing this ocean of sense gratification through severe penances, such persons foolishly drown in a cow's hoofprint when conquered by useless anger. Thus they exhaust the benefit of their difficult austerities in vain. Nila Gopa, you want to read them?
Those who do not accept the devotional service of the Supreme Lord can be considered in two categories. Those engaged in sense gratification are easily conquered by the demigods through various weapons such as hunger, thirst, sexual desire, lamentation for the past and vain hoping for the future. Such materialistic fools, infatuated with the material world, are easily controlled by the demigods, who are the ultimate supplying agents of sense gratification. But according to the Kshetra Swami, persons who attempt to subdue the desires of the material senses and thus avoid the control of the demigods without surrendering to the Supreme Lord arise are even more foolish than the sense gratifiers. Although crossing the ocean of sense gratification, those who perform severe penances without service to the Lord eventually drown in a tiny puddles of anger. One who simply performs material penances does not actually purify his heart. By one's material determination, one may restrict the activities of the senses. Although one's heart is still filled with material desires, the practical result of this is krodha, or anger. We have seen artificial performers of penance who have become very bitter and angry through denial of the senses. being indifferent to the Supreme Lord, such persons do not achieve ultimate liberation, nor can they enjoy material sense gratification. Rather, they become angry and through cursing others or enjoying false pride, they endlessly exhaust the result of their painful austerities. It is understood that when a yogi curses, he diminishes the mystic power he has accumulated. Thus, anger gives neither liberation nor material sense gratification, but merely burns up all the results of the material curses and austerities. Being useless, such a anger is compared to a useless puddle found in a cow's footprint. Thus, after crossing over the ocean of sense gratification, the great yogis who are indifferent to the Supreme Lord drown in a puddle of anger. Although the demigods admit the devotees of the Lord actually conquer the miseries of material life, it is understood here that a similar result is not to be obtained by so-called yogis who are not interested in devotional service to the Supreme Lord.
So any points there?
There's an example, Dhruva Samani. He didn't know how to deal with being English.
I think what this verse is saying is that the Lord is the only shelter. So if your destination or your intention isn't to get closer to the Lord or serve at the feet of the Lord, it doesn't matter that you do the same action, no matter how good. It's about what you're desiring and what you want, what your destination is, and that's the Lord. That's the actual, that's the point, I think.
Yeah, that's true. Anything else?
If you serve Krishna, you can't be a loser.
That's true.
Rupa Goswami mentions about...
Speak loud, sir.
Rupa Goswami mentions in Nectar of Devotion about the six items that kill devotion. One of that is Niyamaka, following...
Nectar of Instruction.
Pardon? Yeah, sorry. It is Nectar of Devotion, sorry. Nectar of Instruction. The goal of doing any austerity is for the pleasure of the Lord. So, whereas if we try to do austerities as a fight against our senses rather than for the pleasure of the Lord, then in one sense the demigods who try to give a sense gratification, it works counter-purpose with them. So you are neither satisfying the demigods, but if you satisfy the demigods, at least you attain heavenly planets. On the other hand, you don't even attain liberation, because when there is not enough purity of the heart, when there is no love, but there is only austerity, it's only at some point in time one is going to burst out. So in anger, that anger is not any way, neither giving mukti nor it is giving mukti. There is nothing in there to give.
Anything else?
The yogis are really not interested in devotional service. They just want to do all the austerities to personal gratification. And that's why, you know, they get angry, because the anger can be controlled only if they do devotion to the Lord.
When your goal is to serve yourself or to get gratification for yourself, you can't defeat the modes of material energy. You can't defeat anger. You can't defeat lust. Only God is your shield.
Good. Any other points?
But you can use anger for the service of the Lord. I learned Hanuman does.
Yeah. So it says here, you had a point? Yeah.
But King Krishnadev teaches that we should, human life is meant for
austerity. Yeah.
So how do
we? Austerity, which is for Krishna's pleasure. That austerity is acceptable. If it's for Krishna's pleasure, then we perform the austerity. If it's not for Krishna's pleasure, then we reject it. You have to do tapasya. You have to do tapasya for Krishna. That's the point. So it's like Ratha Yatra, many devotees will do tapasya. A lot of austerity. No, to make sure the festival is successful. But all that austerity is for Krishna's pleasure. That's the point.
Like Ekadashi first.
Hmm?
Ekadashi first.
Yeah, that's an austerity for Krishna's pleasure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, actual devotees cannot be conquered by allurement in the material world. That is mentioned in the purport. If you're actually a devotee, and this is an important point because devotees sometimes fall down. They become attracted to the material energy and they fall down from their devotional principles. But then when Prabhupada was on the planet, sometimes devotees would fall down. And Prabhupada said, if they are Vaishnava, if they are devotee, why are they falling down? Because Prabhupada said a Vaishnava cannot fall down. A devotee cannot fall down from Krishna's service. It's not possible. You know, you see the example of actual devotees, like Prabhupada himself or Haridas Thakur was the most famous example. That Haridas Thakur was twice approached, once by Maya Devi, once by the prostitute, and he could not be allured. Why? Because he's so fixed in devotional service.
Indeed.
Yeah, he actually converted them into pure devotional service. So that means actual devotees. The devotee, you know, we're called devotee. Sometimes they are the devotees. Right. Yeah, Vaishnava Abbas. Yeah. Abbas means shadow of the devotee. We're not actually devotees on one level. A devotee is someone's at the level of bhava or prema. That's actually a devotee, technically. But, you know, we're said to be Majjhima Adhikari Vaishnavas or, you know, some Kanishtha Adhikari Vaishnavas like that. So we're a lower level. But if you're actually fixed up in Krishna's service, you cannot be allured. And you know how much you're advancing in Krishna consciousness by how much you don't become attracted by the material energy. When the tests do come, if you're not attracted, then that shows you're progressing in Krishna consciousness. So, it's explained within this paragraph that bhakti comes from bhakti. Jnana and karma cannot lead to bhakti. Neither can vairagya, neither can tapasya. In and of themselves, they do not give bhakti. They can assist bhakti, right? Jnana, cultivation of knowledge, right, can assist our devotion. Detachment, vairagya, or tapasya, austerity, can assist our devotion, but it won't give devotion. Right? Only bhakti gives bhakti. And this is explained in the Harinam Chintamani, Haridas Thakur, when he's speaking to Lord Chaitanya. Then it is explained that devotion leads to devotion. We're doing devotional service here. It is called sadhana bhakti, so that we reach the platform of sajja. Sajja means perfection. Because all the activities you're doing here are the same activities you'll do when you get to the spiritual world. Right? Bhakti leads to bhakti. Right? One is bhakti in practice, one is bhakti in perfection. Prabhupada said in his final days, the most fortunate living entities in the universe are the pujaris of Krishna and Balaram. So if you're a pujari, just like, you know, the devotees are making garlands for the deities. Right? So when you go to the spiritual world, you'll also make garlands for the deities. But when we do it in the spiritual world, it has to be done without motivation, without any other material desire being mixed in. Sometimes we make garlands, but then we think, oh, they're my garlands. My garlands are so nice. I make such nice garlands. The deities must be happy with my garlands. You know, I used to think this when I was a new devotee. I used to think, if I lead the kirtan, the deities will be happy. I used to think like that. I used to think, if I lead the kirtan, the deities will be happy. You know, so I should lead. Because then the deities will be happy. Krishna's not particularly happy. These days I don't push forward to lead kirtan. You know, as you get older, things get beaten out of you. Now it's like, you know, I just let other devotees lead kirtan. Sometimes I'll lead. you know. But in the beginning, I used to think, I have to leave because then Krishna will be very happy. No, but it's not like that. No. So when you have those other desires mixed in, then you can't offer pure devotion to Krishna. The mood of the devotee is he always pushes the other devotees towards Krishna. That's the actual. If someone's more talented, you let them do. Like that. Like, you know, if you make better garlands than someone else, then, okay, you make the garlands and get them to assist you because you know your garlands are, you know, like that. You know how to do it. But then if you come to someone who can make better garlands, then you become the assistant. That's how it works in the spiritual world. That's why Lord Chaitanya says, Gopi Bhattu Pada Kamal Yodasa Dasa Anudasa. Because you have to, part of advancing in Krishna consciousness, you have to know who has more talent than you, who has more devotion than you, who has more expertise than you. Right? Sometimes I think like this, like, if there were so many devotees in the movement who had so much more talent than me, I'd just wash the pots. Right? But I don't go and wash the pots because there's services I can do which maybe the pot washer can't do. Right? But if all the other devotees could do the services I do better than me, then yeah, I'll just go and wash the pots happily. Because, you know, you just assist. Whoever's got more respect, then you assist them. You know, if you're the best kirtan leader, then you lead the kirtan. But if someone else is a better kirtan leader, let them lead. Or that. Devotees should be prideless.
But that's the thing which we have to give up, to be humble actually.
Yeah.
Without getting that quality, you can't reach Krishna.
That's true.
That's the last one you have to give up.
That's true. Mm. So it says at the end of the purport that sometimes because of austerity, the heart becomes hard. You see, people do too much tapasya, their heart becomes hard. And Rupa Goswami mentions in the Nectar of Devotion, one who performs bhakti, the heart is soft. You become soft-hearted. That's the nature of bhakti. Mm-hmm. When you do austerity or tapasya, penances, the heart becomes very hard. And when you become hard-hearted, you become proud. I'm doing such austerity and I'm so, you know. Like, and then when you become proud, then anger will come. Right? And you become, that's why it's mentioned here, that they become angry. Right? So we have to be careful. Bhakti is the opposite of that. Instead of becoming proud, we're meant to become more humble. Right? Humility is not an easy quality to actually acquire. Right? As I've said many times over the years, there is that English saying that pride often borrows the cloak of humility. Quite often we're proud, but we just put the cloak of humility over us. Right? And then when devotees are around, we're like, oh. No, we do. Prabhuji, I'm just your servant. Like that. But, you know, that's okay if you are actually like that. If you're like that, that's glorious. But if you're just putting, you know, sometimes I see devotees, they do all this stuff, but then, you know, you just push them a little bit and it's not like that at all. That's not actually the consciousness. Humility is actually an exalted quality. And Sanatana Goswami says in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, it is synonymous with prema, which means it's not a easy quality to develop. Actual humility. I see it in myself. It's not an easy quality to develop. You know, I can see what it is and I can try to emulate it, not very well, but I can try to emulate it. But to actually have it is not an easy thing, actually. It takes a lot of purification, especially if you're proud by birth. Some devotees come into this lifetime, they're humble by birth. It's a great advantage. If you're already humble in this lifetime, but for those of us like myself who were born proud, to go all the way to develop here, it's a lot of work. Please pray for me. Hare Krishna. Give me your blessings, Vaishnavas, Vaishnavis. Because it takes a lot to actually become humble. So if you're not humble, then you become proud. If you're proud, you become angry. And if you become angry, everything is ruined. Krishna says, Bhagavad Gita, everything is ruined by anger. It pollutes the consciousness. So, any points?
Can we say Radharani always says so-and-so will be better? Please take sense.
Yeah, because she is the highest topmost consciousness. Her consciousness is the topmost. So she always... yeah, she always... How can you get two beatbacks?
Because I have two hands.
There's nothing in the Shastra that says you chant on the left hand. Where is it in the Shastra that says touch the beads with the left hand?
I give it the intelligence by which they come to me.
But then it says in the Shastra that you have to qualify anything that you do through the spiritual master. So unless a senior devotee gives you blessings. Unless a senior devotee gives you blessings, then...
So can you please bless me?
I wouldn't bless you.
Left hand, you shouldn't chant.
Left hand, you shouldn't be touching the beads. And it won't set a good example to new people to come. So my blessing is stop doing it.
What is it proven?
He's chanting on... You think you get double the benefit. It doesn't work like that. It's actually speculation. It's not correct. Right? And it won't set a good example. People will come, they'll become confused. Because they actually said in the Shastra, you shouldn't touch it with the left hand. Like that. There's no Shastric evidence. Yena mamupayantite, so Krishna is giving indication in the heart. But then if Krishna is giving indication in the heart, then you have to get the blessings of the guru and the sadhu externally. So unless the guru gives you the instruction, you can't do it. I've never seen any guru in ISKCON do that. Prabhupada never did that. So stop doing it.
Thank you.
Good. Don't speculate. Because then, it's that Rupa Goswami says, if you speculate, it causes a disturbance in society. Otherwise, new people will come and they'll think, you know, like this. That's not good. Not a good thing. Don't do it. Any other points? Prabhupada said the pujaris are the most fortunate devotees. That's what he said.
Most fortunate.
Yeah. Any other points?
We always learn that we should be greedy for the services, and then we also learn that we should push others for the services. And how can we achieve
this? Yeah, so it means as you mature as a devotee, when you're immature as a devotee and you have like Kanishtha tendencies, you always push past the other devotees or you push them out of the way. I've even seen devotees during Snan Yatra, they walk right up the front, step on everyone else and sit right at the front. Because they think that now I'm closer to Jagannath. What do you think Jagannath thinks? Jagannath thinks, go and sit at the back. That's what Jagannath thinks. That's not the right mood. So the mood of being greedy to serve Krishna means that when you become a more mature devotee, because we should be pushing the other devotees forward, but also we should be greedy to do the service. When you become an advanced devotee, you grab the other devotee by the hand and you say, come, let's go together. Right? And you go and do it together. Let's make garlands together. Right? Let's serve the Lord together. Like that. So you hold hands and you do it together. So you're greedy, but you're also pushing the other devotee. Make sense? In the spiritual world, that's what they do. They all grab each other's hand. Come. Come and serve. So you're greedy, but you're also pushing the other devotee.
And greedy.
Yeah. Makes sense? So do like that.
Greedy to please the Lord.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter who does it. It's be greedy to help to make the Lord happy.
Yeah.
And the more people that are serving Him, the better.
Yeah. And if you see someone more qualified, then you push them forward. That's the mood. So, any other point?
Nawab Hussain Shah. Who was his boss?
Nawab Hussain Shah.
No. Before he was a servant of somebody. then he became the Nawab Hussain Shah. Because that boss, he hit him in the back. And his wife said, who has hit you.
Oh, right.
And he said, you...
Yeah, that's in Chaitanya Charitamrita, but I can't remember who the personalities are.
Anyway, that fellow, he said, I can't kill him, but I can put the water, you know, because Muslim people, if they sprinkle the water, they become impure. So everybody advised him to go into the boiling...
drink boiling ghee.
Oil or something?
Ghee.
Ghee or whatever. But then he said, well, then he met Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he told him, you go to Vrindavan and serve all the devotees. And so he went there and he used to pick up the sticks. And he used to buy the rice. And
that's Sanat and Gautam. You're getting it mixed up.
No.
Yeah, it's different persons.
That fellow, he used to collect the sticks and used to sell and buy the rice. And then used to, whatever devotee used to come from Calcutta side, he used to serve them. So he said that, you know, serving the devotees are the best.
That's true.
Yeah.
So bring me Gaurav Chambas. Then you'll get lots of blessings. And you'll please Krishna.
Yeah, that's right.
That's right. While the demigods were thus praising the Supreme Lord, the all-powerful Lord suddenly manifested before their eyes many women, who were astonishingly gorgeous, decorated with fine clothes and ornaments, and all faithfully engaging in the Lord's service. So, Sri Chaitanya, you'd like to read them?
Lord Narayan showed his causeless mercy towards the demigods by relieving them of their false prestige. Although the demigods were proud of their personal beauty and female companions, the Lord showed that he was already being adequately served by numerous gorgeous females, each of whom was far more beautiful than any female companion imagined by the demigods. The Lord manifested such uniquely attractive women through his own mystic potency.
So, any points?
Inconceivable. Lord can do anything.
Anything else?
Even the demigods need a humility lesson every now and then.
Yeah. Yes.
Especially.
Yes.
Especially.
So, it is mentioned here that the internal potency of Krishna is much more powerful than the external potency. Right? Devotional service, if we keep doing devotional service, we will conquer the material energy. Right? Our material desires will disappear. Because the spiritual energy is more powerful. Right? The problem is we are not sincere. Prabhupada pointed out, we are not sincere. That's why we're attracted to Maya. Why are we attracted to Maya? Right? We're not sincere.
We're selfish.
Yeah, we're selfish. If we were actually sincere in Krishna's service, Maya could not affect us. Right? Just like Prabhupada, he was not affected by Maya. Why? Because he was completely given to Krishna. So we're only tempted by Maya because the sincerity is not strong enough at this point. So specifically, it mentions that the internal potency is much more powerful. Daivi Prakriti. Now, why was it that the Lord showed the demigods these beautiful consorts?
Because he must have seen that they are proud.
Yeah, because he wanted to reduce their pride. Right? You try to attract me with these beautiful women, right? But look at the women that I can manifest, right? Much more attractive, right? So that is Krishna's potency. Because the internal potency is always superior to the material potency. It is much more attractive. Right? So we have to allow ourselves to be attracted by the internal potencies instead of the external potency. Yep.
I'm a little bit confused, if you could clarify. I was under the impression that even the Lord's name has the same potency as, like even a drop in the ocean of the Lord's potency is the same as all the potency of the Lord. So I'm a little bit confused as how his internal potency is.
I don't understand what you're saying.
What she's asking, how Lord comes through the internal potency. Lord descends from his future world through the internal potency. That's what I am.
Yes.
The internal potency is more powerful, that's all. Spirit is more powerful than matter. Spirit is more attractive than matter.
Sorry. That's all. Thank you.
When the followers of the demigods gazed upon the fascinating mystic beauty of the women created by Narayan Rishi and smelled the fragrance of their bodies, the minds of these followers became bewildered. Indeed, upon seeing the beauty and magnificence of such women, the representatives of the demigods were completely diminished in their own opulence. The Supreme Lord of Lords then smiled slightly and told the representatives of heaven, who are bowing down before him, please choose one of these women, whoever you find suitable for you. She will become an ornament of the heavenly planets. Vibrating the sacred syllable Om, the servants of the demigods selected Urvashi, the best of the Apsaras. Placing her in front of them out of respect, they returned to the heavenly planets. So you see the pastime of in the Mahabharata when Arjuna goes to Swaga, and then what happens? Who becomes attracted to him? Urvashi. Urvashi is so attractive, she bewilders all the demigods. And then Arjuna could not be tempted by her. There's another example, like Haridas Thakur. Couldn't be tempted. So when someone is attracted to Krishna, purified in consciousness, then he cannot be attracted by the material energy. So even Urvashi, who was the most attractive and could bewilder any demigod, when she became attracted to Arjuna, right, Arjuna was not attracted to her. Right?
I think she was because she was related to him.
No, because she was a consort of one of his forefathers, Nahush. So he wouldn't have any. He considered her to be like a great grandmother. So then, she cursed him to become a eunuch. And then Arjuna went to Indra and he said, "She just cursed me to become a eunuch." Right? And then Indra said, "Don't worry, that will come in handy. That curse, you can use that curse, don't worry." So then that 1 year when they went incognito, then he accepted that curse. Became a eunuch for 1 year. And then
he taught Uttara to dance.
Yeah. And he defeated all the Kauravas.
Yeah.
With bows in his hair.
What is it? Bow in his hair.
Bows in his hair. You know, like ladies, they tie bows in their hair.
Oh, okay.
So he had bows on. And then he went for the Kauravas. He defeated them all.
Okay.
The servants of the demigods reached the assembly of Indra, and thus, while all the residents of the three heavens listened, they explained to Indra the supreme power of Narayana. When Indra heard of Narayan Rishi and became aware of his offense, he was both frightened and astonished. The infallible Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, has descended into the world by his various partial incarnations, such as Lord Hamsa the Swan, Dattatreya, the four Kumaras, and our own father, the mighty Rishabdev. By such incarnations, the Lord teaches the science of self-realization for the benefit of the whole universe. In his appearance as Hayagriva, he killed the demon Matu, and thus brought the Vedas back from the hellish planet, Patala Loka. So the demigods have become humbled. This is why we have to study the offences. Part of studying the science of bhakti is to study the offences. Just like chapter 8 of the Nectar of Devotion, what is it called?
Offences to be avoided.
Very good. Offences to be avoided. Whole chapter, 64 offences. You have to memorize them. Do you know what they are? Do you know one? Tell me one. Chapter 8, 64. You must know something.
To arrive in the temple very opulently. That's one of the first ones.
What's that?
To arrive in the temple very opulently in a palanquin.
Yeah. Yeah. That's an offense. Imagine someone carrying you in a palanquin into the temple. Right? And you're sitting there in the palanquin.
To scold someone in front of the deities.
Yeah. To chastise someone in front of the deities. Yeah. All these things. These are aparads. To bow down one hand. So many things. 64 things are mentioned. We have to study those things.
Red and blue color as well.
Yeah, that's in the deity room itself. In the deity room itself, yeah. You shouldn't wear red or blue. So, we should know the offences. Because when you know the offences, you will avoid them. And when you commit an offence, because sometimes inadvertently we commit an offence, we should become very humble. That's the consciousness of a devotee. When he commits an offense, he thinks, please forgive me. You know, he feels very bad and tries to rectify that offense very quickly. Right? We should not... It's a sign of pride or arrogance. And it is an apparat to commit an offense and not seek to rectify that offense. So you have to be very careful when committing offenses. What's that? Yeah, to pass air in the temple. Yeah, that's also an offense.
If someone committed an offense.
Someone what?
If someone committed an offense in the temple room.
Yeah.
So we should act or how we do that?
Yeah, then you correct them. Like Prabhupada was in there one time. I think it was Bhaktivedanta Manor maybe. And one person came in. It says you should offer your obeisances with the left side. So in our temple, especially because Prabhupada is at the back, like facing, sometimes you see Indian people, they come and they bow down straight on. So one time Prabhupada was there in the pujari, that happened, and he didn't correct the person. Prabhupada said, you should teach them. So that's why they're coming to the temple, to learn. So, you know, if someone's there, like sometimes I see, so I go up there and say, you know, excuse me. I say, when we're here in the temple, because the guru is there, you should not put your feet to the guru. Because although you're respecting Krishna, you're offending the guru. Please go on the left. And most people go, oh, yeah, they like that. So if you see something, then you should.
One person spat inside the temple on the floor and he was harassing one or two Mataji. So I got angry, I grabbed him, took him out, yelling and screaming.
Yeah, that's a different thing.
Is that their offense?
No, that's good. That's good. Because, you know, that kind of behavior is apparat. So there we deal with that quickly. That's cool. That's okay. Just like my wife was at Govardhan Hill, you know, the retreat. So she came around the corner and the local men, the Brijbasis, they were beating one monkey with sticks. And she said, hey! Like really, and they were whoa, like this. When she gets angry, she's like really, like Chatra, like you're yeah, God sisters. So she scared them. And they all went, like, away. She said, get away from them. You know, from the monkey. They were hitting the monkey, you know. So then, but then afterwards she said, oh, maybe I committed a big offense. Got Giri Raj there and their bridge bus isn't like that. But I said, no, it's no offense because you did the right thing. You know, Giri Raj gives you a reaction, that's up to him. But there's no offense because you're acting on behalf of the Lord. So. We have to keep going.
Okay.
As we're at the finish. Okay. The infallible Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, has descended into this world by his various partial incarnations, such as Lord Hamsa, the swan, Dattatreya, the four Kumaras, and our own father.
Do
I read it?
Yeah.
Oh. It's a nice verse. In his appearance as a fish, the Lord protected Swayambhuv Manu, Satyavrata Manu, the earth and her valuable herbs. He protected them from the waters of annihilation. As a boar, the Lord killed Hiranyaksha, the son of Diti, while delivering the earth from the universal waters. And as a tortoise, he lifted Mandara mountain on his back so that nectar could be churned from the ocean. The Lord saved the surrendered king of the elephants, Gajendra, who was suffering terrible distress from the grips of a crocodile. The Lord also delivered the tiny ascetic sages called the Valakilyas when they fell into the water in a cow's hoofprint, and Indra was laughing at them. The Lord then saved Indra when Indra was covered by the darkness due to the sinful reaction for killing Vritrasura. When the wives of the demigods were trapped in the palace of the demons without any shelter, the Lord saved them. In his incarnation as Nrisimha, the Lord killed Hiranyakashipu, the king of demons, to free the saintly devotees from fear. The Lord, the Supreme Lord, regularly takes advantage of the wars between the demons and the demigods to kill the leaders of the demons. The Lord thus encourages the demigods by protecting the universe through his various incarnations during the reigns of each Manu. The Lord also appeared as Vamana and took the earth away from Bali Maharaj on the plea of begging 3 steps of land. The Lord then returned the entire world to the sons of Aditi. Lord Parashuram appeared in the family of Bhrigu as a fire that burned to ashes the dynasty of Haihaya. Thus, Lord Parashuram rid the earth of all Kshatriyas 21 times. The same Lord appeared as Ramachandra, the husband of Sita Devi, and thus he killed the 10-headed Ravana, along with all the soldiers of Lanka. May that Sri Ram, whose glories destroy the contamination of the world, be always victorious. To diminish the burden of the earth, the unborn Lord will take birth in the Yadu dynasty and perform feats impossible even for the demigods. Propounding speculative philosophy, the Lord, as Buddha, thus bewildered the unworthy performers of Vedic sacrifices. And as Kalki, the Lord will kill the low-class men posing as rulers at the end of the age of Kali. O mighty-armed king, there are innumerable appearances and activities of the Supreme Lord of the universe similar to those I have already mentioned. In fact, the glories of the Supreme Lord are unlimited. Grantara Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki. Yeah.